This is Money Talking from WNYC. Good morning, I'm Charlie Herman. If you haven't heard, the stock market has been on a tear recently. Sure, there are days when it bounces around and it ends up closing down, but in the past few weeks, the broadest measures of the market, like the Dow Jones and the S&P 500, have been setting new record highs. For the year so far, the Dow Jones is up nearly 17%. So, did you time it right? Did you get into the market at the right moment, or did you miss out and you're asking yourself, is it too late? Well, joining me is Rana Faruhar with Time Magazine and Jonah Serra with The New York Times. And Rana, if I wanted to get into the market today, am I buying at the high and it's only downhill from here, or am I in the middle and it's going to keep going up?
Well, I wouldn't say the middle and I wouldn't say the high, but I say we're pretty close to the high. Now, the big question is, if we have a correction, is everything going to tumble, or are some stocks going to be a little more vulnerable to the central bank-induced bubble that we've talked about a lot on this show? And that's the big question. And I have opinions about that, but I want to hear Joe's too.
Well, I generally think things are pretty high. And the reason – here's some interesting statistics. The price-earnings ratio for the Standard & Poor's 500, which is the 500 stocks that the S&P tracks most closely, is under 17. That's an important barometer of how high stocks are generally. And 17 is not a crazy number.
Well, explain that number to me more. I mean, what does that mean when I hear that the P.E. ratio of the S&P is at 17?
Well, historically, 17 is pretty benign. During the internet bubble and various other bubbles, it has been in the low 20s and even the mid 20s. So 17 is not, but it's also in the last 3 or 4 years been much lower than that. The real issue is on the profit side. Mm. And the bears are basically saying that the profit margins that we're seeing right now are unsustainable. And that for that reason, the numbers that make this market look benign are a little bit illusory. So it's a slightly technical argument, but it's not an unimportant one. And so what they're basically saying is that as profit margins come down over the next year, which is what they think is going to happen,
that companies will make less money.
Right.
Yes. And that the stock market will come down along with profits.
Here's a question. If you decide that, okay, I want to get into this market, I think it's going to go up, we've listened to this conversation and decided now's my time. I mean, what's the best way to get involved in the market? Is it to take passive index funds, that are offered that really track what the larger markets do? Or is it better to, find someone that actively trades accounts or to actively trade yourself?
Well, I mean, the classic advice, of course, is to be in index funds. And it's advice that I follow myself. I mean, there's been a lot of research done recently on the fees that are charged by various funds. They're rarely worth your time and your money. Whether or not you're going to jump into an S&P index right now and make a lot of money, I'm not going to say. But I think over the long haul, that's a safe bet for most average people.
History is very clear on this. Index funds win. Even the best money managers usually ultimately don't outperform the market over the long haul. And you're better not to even try. The other thing about an index fund is, most people shouldn't be timing the market one way or the other. Mm-hmm. If you have a long time horizon, it's not quite
buy
right to say
hold.
It doesn't ever matter. But just, buy it and hold it. And then 20 years from now, you'll look up and you'll be happy.
Well, finally, let's look ahead to some of the other stories we're watching. Rana, what's on your radar?
So I'm looking at this Chinese mega acquisition that's just been announced. China's largest meat processor has announced it's going to lay down $4.7 billion in cash to try and buy Smithfield's, which is a U.S. company, which is the world's largest pork producer. Now, pork is the standard everyday meat in China. And as the Chinese middle class grows, Chinese people want a lot more meat. They used to have a diet more of rice and vegetables. Now, the increasing amount of protein that people are consuming is driving up the market for that. The big question is, A, is it going to be approved here? I mean, we've seen a lot of sensitive acquisitions in recent years that haven't been approved in the U.S. for national security reasons. Or
Are pork bellies national security?
Is bacon, exactly.
Is bacon a national
security
issue? Is
bacon strategic is the question, and not just for breakfast. I think that that's going to be very interesting to see. But here's what I do know. The Chinese middle class is growing hugely. By 2022, the Chinese middle class is projected to be 630 million people. Okay. Now, they still have a lot of poor people, but think about that market for U.S. companies. So if we start to kind of lubricate trade and foreign direct investment between those two countries, I think that could be a great boon to not only U.S. growth, but global growth.
You know, Ron, I think you're absolutely right. But when you talk about U.S. investment, one of the things that this deal raises to me is whether we can somehow use deals like this to as leverage so that our own investment abilities are increased in China. Yes, there is a lot of U.S. investment in China, but it's almost always in joint ventures that the Chinese ultimately control. And there are a lot of restrictions on what U.S. companies can and cannot do in China. And so to me, obviously, pork bellies are not a national security issue, but it does raise the question of whether, you know, we're going to be able to compete on the same basis investing in China as they can do here.
Well, do you think it's a coincidence, or what role could even this deal play in the meeting that's happening next week between the new Chinese president and President Obama? You know, it's really this idea of trying to, or at least the Chinese president said, he wants to find a new model of major country relations, basically to find a better way for the U.S. and China to work together. Could this be on the plate, or is this sort of a scene setter? Is this a scene setter for bigger issues?
Well, I think it drives home the fact that there is so much economically at stake between the U.S. and China. We are in bed together, you know, in almost every respect, in terms of trade, in terms of investment, in terms of jobs, and just really realizing that. And as Joe's saying, the Chinese should realize they've got to open up their markets. You know, state-owned firms in China have actually been resurging. The private sector capitalists in that country have been under a lot of pressure in recent years. And yes, deals like this could be a lever to really make the playing field a little bit more even and ultimately help growth in both countries.
Well, we'll be watching those stories and all the week's financial news at wnyc.org/business. You can also take this program with you as a podcast, available on iTunes. Joe Nocera with The New York Times and Rana Furuhar with Time Magazine, thanks for joining.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Charlie Herman. This is Money Talking from WNYC.